That is my little report portion of today's service. Now I'm going to go to the sermon portion. And as I go to the sermon portion, what I want to talk about today is also related to money and generosity and finances and all that kind of stuff. And in particular, I want to address a couple of responses that we usually have when we talk about donations, offering, generosity, reaching out. One of the first responses that we usually have, especially for those of us young people or, you know, early career people, is that you think that you don't have enough. We think that we don't have enough to make an impact. Because we have shown you a lot of numbers, and you think that maybe your offering that you're going to contribute now that is realistic to you is $5 per week. But then $5, what is $5 per week going to do for a monthly expense of $28,500? How many $5 is going to take to get you to that number? And that's only the English service. If you look at the big budget, $2.5 million was the budget for next year. How many $5 do you need to get to that number? And so we think that we don't have enough. Our contributions is too little to make an impact. And so usually what happens is we wait until we get older. We wait until we have more money to make a bigger impact. And we think that by then the offering will be meaningful. Now the offering is probably not so significant. Now, from a purely mathematical perspective, I can't say that you're wrong. $5 is a very small amount when you compare it to $2.5 million of budget. That's the first response that usually people have when we talk about offering. The second response that we usually have is we wonder whether we have enough or not. When we talk about offering 10%, tithing, all that kind of stuff, usually what happens is in our mental, in our mind, we start to do those mental math stuff. Does my income cover for my expense? Do I actually have spare to give out in offering? And I understand this is totally reasonable because things are much more expensive these days. If you're saving up for your next life goals, you know, your workplace, or you want to get a place, you know, you want to get married, there's some traveling goals, you know, a car, a school, education, all that kind of stuff. Things are expensive. And so I understand that you're going to need to do some math to plan out. And sometimes you will wonder whether you have enough to contribute extra on the spare for offering. Generally, those are two of the many responses that we have when we talk about offering, talk about donation, or generosity. Is that whether there's enough impact to it, whether the amount is insignificant, the other is whether we have enough. So today I thought that we would go back to an event in the Bible where Jesus and his 12 disciples, they were also faced with a math problem. And they had to solve a math problem. Let's see what we can learn from them. John chapter 6. One day, Jesus went to a place beside the Sea of Galilee. And there was a large crowd that was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. And Jesus went up on a mountain. He was intending to take a break to rest there. And there he sat down with the 12, with his disciples. And then a large crowd started to follow him, right? The first question that I have is, how big is this crowd? Some of you guys know this already. How big was this crowd? It was 5,000 men, to be exact. Now, if you include all the women and the children and the family that's probably traveling with them, you are going to be looking at 20,000 people. 20,000 people. How big is this number, 20,000? Just for a reference, this is Rogers Arena. Who has been to Rogers Arena for a concert, for Canucks, and all that kind of stuff? Shawn Mendes just came, right? There's a Korean group coming next year. This Rogers Arena sits 20,000 people. That is how many people are following Jesus. Not here, not 100, not 200, not all of this, which is approximately, supposedly, 1,000 people. 20,000. The whole Rogers Arena is following Jesus Christ wherever he goes. And Jesus, John chapter 6, verse 5, he lifted up his eyes and he saw this Rogers Arena of people coming towards him. And so Jesus said to Philip, and there is the first math problem that he gave. He said to Philip, Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these people can eat? And the disciples immediately started to do math. Okay, there's 5,000 men. There's approximately 20,000 people. How many pieces of bread do we need to at least fill them just a little bit? And the reason why Philip was asked is Philip was a local, and he was a math guy. He was fast. He was logical. His brain, mental math, all that kind of stuff was really good. And so he was the first one that gave the answer. He says 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to even get a little bit. Philip says, we got 200 denarii. How much is 200 denarii? 200 denarii is half a year worth of savings between the 12 disciples. They have half a year worth of savings, and he says, that's not going to be even enough for everybody to get a bite. And Philip is probably thinking to his 12 disciples, to the disciples, I mean, that's not how we're going to use our savings. That's not what we signed up for when we followed Jesus that day. Because what if we use them all of it right now, go to TD Bank, pick it all up, and then purchase all the bread? What about tomorrow? What are we going to eat tomorrow? I mean, Jesus, are you done with your preaching tour? Do we go back home to start working to cover for this? Like, what about the months and months that we're going to be on the road for? How are we going to provide? What are we going to eat? And not only that, Philip says, I still have my marriage plans. I still want to go to Tokyo. I still want to go to Japan. I still want to get married. I'm still saving up for my down payment. I'm not going to spend all of my life saving for a night of preaching and worship to feed 20,000 people? And so Philip, in his mind, he already calculated all of it. He says, in math, by math, it's not impossible. This math doesn't work out. 200 denarii does not equal to 20,000 people. Jesus, in case you didn't know. But Jesus insisted that they go find the solution, an answer to this math problem. Jesus knew what the answer was. He didn't tell them. He wanted to test them. But he wasn't testing them for their problem solving, for their math ability, their mental math. He was testing them for something else. And so the disciples begrudgingly comply, and they go like, whatever, okay, fine, we'll go ask the crowd. And so then they, stopped the preaching, and they would put out some announcements, and they went to the 20,000, the Rogers Arena equivalent. They went to the 20,000 people, and they started to ask if people have food. Did they have any food? Nobody gave them any food. 20,000 people? Nobody brought food? Why is that? Now, I think there's probably a couple of reasons, possible reasons, why 20,000 people didn't bring food. The first thing is, probably they didn't expect that they're going to have to eat. And Jesus just talked for way too long. And so, we didn't bring food. We don't bring food to a concert. We expect to eat afterwards. The second possible reason is they didn't want to give anything out because they're just here to watch the show. It's entertainment. It's just they're listening to the great teacher. This is a free show, right? I'm not expected to give something. I'm a visitor. I'm an observer. I'm watching. That's the other reason. The third reason, why did 20,000 people that nobody gave any food? Why is that? The third possible reason is everybody just thought that it was absolutely ridiculous. You want me to give my dinner for 20,000 people? Like, have you checked your math? Like, is that going to work out? That's ridiculous. And so the disciples looped around and spent 30 and an hour, and they found out that 20,000 people did not have food for 20,000 people. And they searched and searched and searched, and then they were about to give up. They were going to hand back like an empty, the test paper and just expect a big fat red zero on the test that Jesus gave them. They were going to give up, and they walked back, and all of a sudden, there was this little boy ran through the crowd and tapped one of the disciples on the shoulders. This little boy tapped the shoulders of Andrew. Andrew turned around, looked at this little boy. This little boy had dirt on his face. His clothes was a bit broken and worn out. He looked like he was this tall, and he was a great, one or two or three. This little boy told him, I heard you guys were looking for food. Here is the lunch that I brought this morning. Took a little napkin pouch, unwrapped it. There's one, there's two, there's three, there's four, there's five barley loaves. And he went to the other, dirty pocket, and he took out two little dried fish. And the little boy held it in front of Andrew. Andrew didn't know how to respond to this. Like, is this supposed to be funny? Like, is this, like, he feels humiliated. He feels like, he feels a little angry. He felt like it's kind of funny. Like, how, what do you expect me to do with this? But it's a little boy. Andrew knows not to let it out on a little boy. And so Andrew told the little boy, hey, why don't I bring you to the teacher? And so the 12 and the one little boy, went back and saw the teacher. The disciples gathered back before Jesus and expected none of the other disciples found any food except for Andrew. There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many? What is 5 pieces going to do for 20,000 people? How many 5 pieces of bread are we going to need to feed 20,000 people? I mean, that's not going to be enough for even one adult. What difference, what impact is this 5 going to make? And the disciples, the 12, gathered around Jesus. They stared at the 5 and the 2. And they just stared at this impossible mathematic equation. How does 5 and 2 become 20,000? What answer does the teacher have in mind? Jesus probably smiled a little bit, because to Jesus, it was never a math problem. It was not just a math equation, not as we know it. Jesus, he looked at the 12 and the 1. And he said, have the 20,000 people sit down. And all the people sat down. And then Jesus took the five pieces of bread. And he gave thanks and he broke it. He divided it and he distributed it. And he also took the 2. He divided the 2. And he gave it away. Everybody had as much as they wanted. 20,000 people. And when this 20,000 had eaten all that they wanted, Jesus told the 12, gather up the leftovers that nothing may be lost. So the 12 went out, gathered up, and filled 12 baskets of leftover from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. Since when did 5 and 2 equal 20,000? How is that possible? You can do this equation a million times with human mathematics. It's never going to give you that number. You have 5 and you have 2. How on earth is it possible to get 20,000? Well, on earth it's not possible. Because Jesus is not giving out an earthly math problem. Jesus says this requires much more than that. Jesus here introduces to the disciples and the 12, and honestly for all of us here today, that there is a layer of mathematics that's above what we know. And that's kingdom mathematics. Because when Jesus is here, even the normal rules of earthly mathematics and science fall underneath the power of Jesus. Think about it. How did Jesus multiply the loaves? He divided it. When was the last time you got a multiplication out of a division? How did Jesus get more bread? He broke it into smaller pieces. Jesus' mathematical ability is on another level. This is kingdom mathematics. And that evening, Jesus showed his disciples that his power and who he is above what we know. And in particular, I think he showed all of us here today that there's two kingdom mathematic principles that we need to learn from and we need to know from the bottom of our hearts. Kingdom mathematics goes by a different set of principles. And I want to tell you two of them today. The first principle that Jesus showed is what I call the impact principle. The impact principle. Now, normal mathematics that you've learned in school and economics tell you that $5 is very little in the face of 2.5 million. So is 5 pieces of bread in the face of 20,000 people. That is very little. And so there is little incentive to give when you only have 5 and 2 in front of 20,000. And that is correct in human mathematics. But kingdom mathematics says something different. The principle says the impact of a gift is not determined by the size, but by the one who receives the gift. The impact of a gift is not determined by its size, but by the one who receives the gift. Let me explain to you. What was the result of 5 and 2? What was the impact of 5 bread and 2 fish? Think about it. The result was 5 and 2 became 20,000. You and I all know this. But not just 20,000. It was 20,000 people had as much as they wanted. And not only that, there was 12 baskets of leftover. The impact does not depend on the size, but the one that uses it. Not only that, if you think about something just more macro here, just think one step above. The result of this miracle was that everybody in the 20,000 people, they realized that Jesus was the prophet. And then what ends up happening is as time goes by, the early church started, and when the gospel writers, they wrote down Jesus' story. This is the only miracle that is recorded in all 4 gospels. What does that mean? That means that the first century church, the early church that was so known for generosity, for giving, for sacrifice, for helping people, they are inspired by the story. This story is important to them. And if you think for 2,000 years, this story has been inspiring people from all over the world to give, to sacrifice, to help. Not to mention all the organizations that have started because of these two numbers, a 5 and a 2. That's the point of the impact principle. The impact of a gift is determined by the one who receives it, not the size of it. The impact of a gift is determined by the person who has the gift, not the size of it. I like to think about it this way. Regardless if it's 5 and 2 or whatever number that you have, when you give it to Jesus, the one who has infinite power, you know that math equation? Take something exponential, you know, whatever thing. You take 5 and 2, you take it to the power of infinity. What do you get? The impact is immeasurable. You can't measure it. That is what you're doing. That's how kingdom mathematics work. It's not the size. It's the one who has it. Sometimes you and I like to think that $2, $5 is very little. In human terms, it's very little, but in kingdom terms, it's not. You know what this is. Here's a piece of pencil. You know how much this costs? 36 cents. With $2, you can get 5 of these. You know what this pencil is used for? I always write my sermon drafts and outlines with a pencil. 36 cents is not 36 cents of impact. The impact is not dependent on the monetary value. You know this? This is a piano. You know how much that piano costs? $3,500. That's quite a big number, honestly. But in the grand scheme of 2.5 million budget, that doesn't cost that much. But every single Saturday, this piano is used in 3 services, sometimes in prayer meetings, to lead people to worship. $3,500 is not its impact. Its impact is much more than its price tag. You know the impact principle? You know how it works? The impact is determined by the one who receives it, not the size of it. Small amount of offering can have a big impact, especially those that are beyond monetary value, when you put it in the right hands. That night when Jesus broke the five and the two and distributed, he showed us that there's another level to mathematics, kingdom mathematics. And he showed us that there is this thing called the impact principle, but there's also this second principle that we must learn. It's called the provision principle. And it works like this. Normal math, economics, business says that when you give something away, you're going to have less. That's logic. In a closed monetary environment, when somebody has more, or when you give out something, then you're going to have less. The kingdom principle says something different. Says something quite unbelievable, but it's true. It says that God provides for the needs of those who provide for others. It says that God is generous to those who are generous to others. In other words, it says that in giving away what we have, what we need will be given to us. Let me give you an example. Think back to that little boy. I want to give you a math question. The little boy started off with five and two, five bread and two fish. He gave the five and the two away. The question is, how much did he have left? The first option is nothing. He gave it away. He ended with zero. The second option is, oh, he got five and two back. The third option is he got more than five and two, and the fourth option is you don't know. Think about it. How much did the little boy end up with? You might think that he ended up with nothing. That's how your math works. That's how our math works. But that's not how kingdom math works. You know why? That little boy was part of the 20,000 people that ate that day, yeah? How much did the 20,000 people eat? As much as they wanted. Meaning that little boy brought the five bread and the two fish for a modest lunch. He gave it away, and what he got was an all-you-can-eat buffet, albeit just bread and fish. He got much more than he started off with. And sometimes I have even a speculation. I have one more thought. Where do you think that 12 baskets of leftover went? Think about it. Did the disciples bring with them? Everybody lugging a basket? No, I don't think so. Where did they go after? They went on a boat, and there was a storm. And Jesus taught them to not bring anything. I don't think the disciples have the 12 baskets. Did Jesus throw it away to compost? No. Jesus just said, I don't want to waste any of this. Would Jesus give a command to say, 12 baskets, why don't you divvy it up again to 20,000 people? Everybody have a souvenir to take home. Well, who is going to decide? Like, is the 20 baskets going to be enough? Like, who decides how to go? Like, who's going to have more? Like, what if there's not enough? How about you give it to the little boy who started all of that? Now, that's a speculation. You can write a sermon based off of that. But the provision principle still applies. In giving away the five and two, the little boy didn't lose anything. In fact, in this particular scenario, he got more than what he started off with. And God's promise is the same to us today. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all that you need will be added to you. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, you will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way. So the question then is, do you believe that God will meet your need after you give that $10 a month, $100 a month, $1,000 a month? Do you believe that God knows that you need a roof over your head? He knows you need a car to get to work. He knows that you need tuition to graduate. Do you believe that the God who multiplied 5 and 2 to become 20,000 can provide for the little that you worry about? What if giving is the avenue to allow you to experience the provision of God? What if giving away allows you to experience God's promise? What if the solution to our worrying and our anxiety about what to eat, what to drink, what to wear tomorrow? What if the solution to our anxiety and our worrying is actually not holding on and hoarding and saving? What if the solution to worrying and anxiety is actually giving away and generosity? Because then you see God provides for you. That's the power and the implication of the prevention principle, kingdom mathematics. That night when Jesus made 5 and 2 equals 20,000, he showed us there's another tier of mathematics that we must believe in, kingdom mathematics. And in kingdom mathematics, there's two principles, the impact principle. The impact of something is not dependent on its size, but the God who has it. And the provision principle, God provides for the needs of those who provide for others. And so it turns out, to Jesus, it was never a math question. It was not a math question as we know it. It was a faith question. He wanted to test Philip in the same way he wanted us to know this as well. And what is he testing? He's testing our faith. Do you believe in this kingdom principle? And this faith question, I'm going to spell out for you very concretely. There's two parts to this. Part A is, who's Jesus to you? After you have seen him, make 5 and 2 equals to 20,000. Who is Jesus to you? Is he A, just a Saturday activity that you come because your mom forced you to? Is it B, he's a life coach, he gives good lessons and there's a good experience, the event's kind of cool? Or is it C, he's actually the Lord of life where math and science falls down in his power? And he actually cares and loves you and he calls you to follow. Is he that? That's the faith question. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is, then who are you going to be? Are you going to be the crowd that watches from the distance? Goes to Rogers Arena for a show, I'm not going to participate, I'm just here for the free food. Or are you B, you're a disciple, but you worry, you doubt. I'm not going to participate because I don't have enough. Or are you going to be the C, the little boy who had 5 and 2 only, but he gave it in obedience. And in faith. Our encouragement for you, of course, is to be like the little boy. Live out the impact principle. Live out the provision principle, but you have to put yourself in the equation. That principle will just operate away and apart from you if you're not in the equation. You have to put yourself in the equation. And what that means, you already know. Offering account. I said this at the beginning. But the offering account means I am going to sign me up as the little boy. When I have 5 and 2, I'm going to try my best to give 1 and 1. And then I'm going to give 2 and 1. And then I'm going to give 3 and 1. I want to be that little boy. That's what the offering account means. Second thing, regular percentage giving. When God, I'm going to decide that when God gives me 5 and 2 to live on for today, I'm going to give that 1. When God gives me 10 and 5 for that month, I'm going to give out that 1. Give out that 2. Give out that 3. And I want to give you one more thing that you could do. I really encourage you to do this. Would you start some sort of like an offering journal? The point of this is to keep track of how much you've given. Write it down every single time that you've given. Add it up. Tally it at the end of the month, end of the quarter, end of the year. And then on the same page in your journal, write down any time you see those two principles in effect. Would you test them? See whether it makes sense. See whether it's real, whether it's true. What that means is you're going to look for the times when God works and multiplies what you've given him. Have you given him a pencil? Has he used the pencil? Have you given him a piano? How has he used a piano? Maybe it's a staff, a worker, something in the reaching out campaign. What have you given, and how is God using it to multiply its impact? The other thing you're going to look for is, how does God provide for you? Have you gotten more broke? Do you have to starve throughout the day? Do you have to quit your school because you don't have enough tuition? This is something that I have done intermittently. And I know this, especially when I received a donation receipt at the beginning of each year. I am amazed by the amount that I've given, but not because that it's such a big amount, but it's because I thought it was impossible. But here I am. I just came back from 2 weeks in Hong Kong. I got a new car this year. I have a new baby. Well, he is well and fat and good and all that stuff taken care of. I don't have any lack. And if anything, I have a very comfortable lifestyle. God is faithful. He has always provided for me. That principle works. And you know what all of this giving and stuff is going to do for you, and as it did for me? It's not about paying the bills. It's not about keeping the lights on. It's much more important than this, because giving is a faith problem. Giving allows your faith to grow. In other words, a faith that gives is a faith that grows. Because a faith that gives is a faith that sees God's power and promise. And that faith grows. And you know what's amazing about that is when your faith grows, the more you're going to give. And the more you're going to give, the more your faith grows. And this is why the pastors, year after year after year, we always teach about offering. Because your faith is at stake. This is your chance to acknowledge who God is, and you get to experience God's promise, God's provision, and his power. This is your chance to see what Jesus is going to do. And what's so special about you all is you guys are young. A faith that gives is a faith that grows, and a faith that grows is a faith that gives. It's a snowballing effect. It's a compounding interest kind of thing. It's an exponential curve kind of thing. Whatever you want to call it, you have a chance to start young. All you young people, you're grade 8. You have a chance to start now to build your faith. Why don't you do that? I don't know about you, but if you ask me, I don't want to be the crowd. I don't want to be the crowd. I don't want to just watch all this happen. If Jesus is going to turn 5 and 2 into 20,000, I don't want to just watch this happen. I don't want to watch my peers and my friends experience all of this, and I don't get to be a part of this. I don't want to be just the crowd. And honestly, I don't even want to just be the disciples. I don't always want to chicken out at the last moment and doubt and miss out what God wants me to do. I don't want to worry my life away. I don't want to live in fear and worries. I want to be like that little boy. I want to be involved. I want to grow in my faith. If God is making 5 and 2 equal 20,000, I want to be a part of it. And if giving the 5 and 2 allows me to experience God, I want to do it. That's me. I don't know about you. You know, later on, Jesus also fed 4,000 people with 7 pieces of bread, though. I want to be that kid that brought up that 7 pieces of bread In fact, I want to be the same kid. If it was the same kid that brought it, because you know the disciples surely didn't. I want to be that kid that brought it again and again, because I'm like, I want to see God's power. I want to see God working in this place. And you know what? I don't even want to just get in the numbers equation. I want much more than this. God, Jesus has sent out the disciples to heal people, to minister to the sick. I want to be a part of that. I want to see how God works. I want my faith to grow to the point where God will use me. I want to be at moments in my life where if there's an ocean, there's trouble, there's difficulties, there's a storm, there's a wave in front of me, I want to have the faith to take a step and walk on it. I don't want to be content watching and worrying and watching everything pass by. I want to be involved. I want to be a part of it. I want to see how impossible becomes possible. I want my faith to get bigger, my prayers get bolder, my trust gets stronger. And if that means giving 5 and 2 allows me to do all of those, that's very little in comparison to that. If 5 and 2 allows me to experience God changing me, using me to change other people, 5 and 2 is very little when compared to all of this. So if that means I gotta give 5 and 2, 1 or 2, 3 or 4, 5 or 6, God help me to always give it. Help me to take a step of faith to trust you. And I hope that's you tonight as well.